This is The Agenda from News Radio 560, KPQ, and KPQ.com, where topics of local concern are open for discussion.
Thanks for joining us on The Agenda today, and we have, I'm knocking on the counter there. We've had a milder fire season, thankfully, but that may be a little bit of a double-edged sword, as we're about to learn a little bit with Holly Craig from the Okanagan-Wenatchee National Forest. And we've also heard the terms controlled burn or prescribed burn, but good fire is maybe another way to think about ways that we can try and prevent catastrophic fires. So, Holly, thanks for joining us today. It's almost time for, again, is what we tended to think of or refer to as prescribed fall burning season. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Happy to be here, Dave.
So let's talk about the term good fire and the season ahead of us, and maybe why that term may be a more adequate term to describe the purpose of it.
Absolutely. So the term itself, good fire, started out of the southeast region of the United States, where they use prescribed fire quite effectively as a tool and are able to burn millions of acres every year to help restore their watersheds and better protect their communities. So here in the Northwest, it started to take off in the past couple years as an easy, really approachable term to understand the difference between what we're trying to do when we go out there and set prescribed fires or manage a wildfire for something other than full suppression versus the destructive mega fires that we have seen in past years.
So this year there has been, I would say, a milder fire season for us here. We haven't had the larger, more significant fire acreage here in our area. We haven't had the smoky conditions, thankfully, even blowing in from outside the region as well. So we've really been blessed, but has that been somewhat of a double-edged sword in some regards?
It has, right? So we know that in this fire-adapted landscape that every acre that doesn't burn at some point just grows more fuel, more woody debris, down material, each and every day and each and every summer that it doesn't burn. So although we all enjoy clean air and having our kiddos' soccer games and school practices and all those kind of things, it does add to the fire debt that we've been building up for the past century or so by putting out all fires. So it's definitely a double-edged sword.
So that's why the fall burning season or the good fire burning season is about to get underway. And you sent out this information about a week or so ago. Is it a little earlier this year than normal, given the conditions we've had and experienced this summer?
Yeah, we are a little bit earlier than normal and really looking to take advantage of slightly cooler temperatures, slightly higher humidity. Conditions out there on the ground are looking pretty good to start our prescribed fire season that we do every fall and spring. So we are trying to take advantage of those conditions to put that good fire back on the landscape and let it work for us rather than just fight against it year after year.
So the Okanagan-Wenatchee National Forest covers, all the way from the Canadian border down to around Yakima?
About 4.2 million acres.
That's a lot of territory. How much is targeted for projects this summer?
So this fall, with our prescribed fire season, we're looking at about 11,000 acres of prescribed fire. That's fairly average for us. We try and accomplish about 25,000 acres total in both spring and fall through burning and other vegetation treatments, taking fuel off the land that could burn in the future. So this fall, 11,000 acres are planned. Could be a little bit more or could be a little bit less, depending on the conditions out there.
So when are they actually starting? Any time now?
So we could be starting as soon as this week. We're looking at burning down in Yakima County in the Canteen area, for folks familiar with that, starting as soon as tomorrow, August 27th, and then looking for the right opportunities and conditions in the Leavenworth area, Chelan area, the Enneat, all the way up to Okanagan County, really from north to south, up and down the forest of areas that need this type of work.
We're talking with Holly Craig with the Okanagan-Wenatchee National Forest. Some of the priority burn areas in Chelan County include 25 Mile Creek, the Forest Mountain area west of Chelan. So it's a whole list here. There are, I would say, a dozen projects or right around a dozen projects or so already identified in Chelan County. But we were visiting just before we jumped on the air here. There's a lot of old piles left over from cleanup after the big fires at the Eniat back in 2018.
Yeah, absolutely. So something a little bit different this year is there's about 1,700 acres, if you will, of piles that were constructed as a part of the efforts to protect the community of Eniat and Ardenvor from the 2018...
That would be the preferred French pronunciation.
Right. from the 2018 Cougar Creek fire. So we're going to be looking to take care of those piles, the ones that are dried out and ready to go this fall, to get that material off the landscape and not available to burn in the future.
And then up in Okanagan County, they've had a lot of fires up there as well. Lot of burn piles up there to be taken care of, do you know?
There are piles up there as well from the 2017 and 2018 fires in Diamond Creek and Crescent Mountain, and you know, you could name several fires that there would be piles from potentially, but we're also looking at our more traditional large acre prescribed fire as well.
So when they do these large acreage burns, is it more of the kind of the undergrowth that's growing in between the trees? Kind of what happens on one of these good fires?
Yep. So just kind of walking you through what happens is we go out there at about 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning and we set a small test fire, usually about a quarter acre or so. And that's really to say, you know, is this going to burn hot enough to actually do some good? Or is it going to burn too hot, right? We're kind of looking for that Goldilocks moment, that sweet spot of burning hot enough to burn the grass, the shrubs, really raise the ladder fuels, as we call them, that would take a fire from the forest floor up into the canopy and really increase the tree mortality. So we're looking at all of those things. If the test fire goes successfully, then we'll start the work of putting more and more fire on the ground, and then over the course of the afternoon, concurrently work to hold it to the roads or other lines that we've put in. So it's both an art and a science when we go out there and do this type of work, and we're really looking for low to moderate fire intensity. So like I described, hot enough to burn stuff off and get it to a good kind of open forest condition, if you want to visualize that, but not hot enough that we're taking off treetops or anything like that.
But then they also have to figure out, we have to do this on a day when we're not going to cause real smoky conditions, so maybe just the right amount of breeze. What kind of factors do they take into consideration to not impact communities too much?
Yep. So we closely coordinate with both the National Weather Service out of Spokane, as well as the State Department of Ecology and State Department of Natural Resources, which is who we actually get our daily burn approval from. So we coordinate with them, getting a spot weather forecast, which tells us for this particular location or this particular ridge in the Eniat, for example, this is going to be the winds both at the surface level, maybe 7 miles an hour to the west-northwest or something. And then we also look at transport winds aloft. So when the smoke rises and hits a certain level, are we going to have transport winds that are different than the surface winds that would take it somewhere different, right? And because those can be very different. One can be blowing to the north and the other to the west, and it can change things. We're also looking at how fast that would disperse, the amount of smoke that we're going to produce, and if it's going to go over a dispersed area or funnel down into a community. And those are all factors that we consider.
We're talking with Holly Craig with the Okanagan Wenatchee National Forest. I just spotted something over the weekend on Facebook or Instagram, and it was a viral video. There were a couple of them, and it looked like it was a camera had been set in an area, and you could see what seemed to be somewhat in the distance flames coming through some very tall trees, and then the flames come and overwhelm the area where this camera is sitting there. Apparently it was some sort of flame-proof camera, but then the flames overwhelm the area where the camera is. But it was alarming to see how quickly the flames were spreading, and then it's right in the middle of and you see some sort of cyclonic things going on. And it just relives points out how dangerous, first off, these wildland firefighter conditions are for these wildland firefighters, particularly in the stands of tall trees, but secondly, how quickly those flames can move. So, again, you can see the science you were just describing. They have to really kind of know what they're doing when they set this up so that it doesn't take off and make big runs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we do get questions every year, you know, do we have escape, controlled fires, what happens? We have the premier firefighting force in the entire world. Quite proud of that as the USDA Forest Service. And in the past decade or so on the Okanagan-Wenatchee, we've had two escaped prescribed fires. So it is possible, right? With everything, there is a risk factor there. But we've also successfully treated thousands of acres from the Canadian border down to Yakima, reduced risk for communities, improved forest health, improved wildlife habitat. So there is a risk, but the rewards and the trade-offs are certainly there as well.
Well, looking at your list, most of the priority burn areas are Chelan and Okanagan County, not so much in Kittitas or Yakima County. So it seems like most of the focus is in north central Washington this year for these projects. But again, the plan is beyond these projects to maybe do more than at least what's identified here. Right now, they'll kind of see how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have planning efforts in the Tanum watershed and in the upper Wenatchee, up by Lake Wenatchee area. We have a project that will come online in the Methow. We have the Mount Hall project up in Okanagan County. All of those are planning efforts that will likely have or do have some elements of both thinning, commercial thinning, non-commercial thinning, and prescribed fire to help restore the forest. So folks will see us continuing to work and continuing to get the environmental planning done to be able to implement prescribed fires in other communities as well.
How long will the work last? Is there a kind of a defined period, or is just based on what weather will allow this fall?
We're hoping for as long of a window as we can get so that we can treat as many acres as we can. So we will start as soon as tomorrow and this week, this last week of August, and probably go through October is usually when we see conditions start to deteriorate. But we could go until we have a season-ending event, rain or snow out there on the landscape.
Well, let's ask you this. We never got into the more severe campfire restrictions this summer. So how unusual is that in your experience here?
It ebbs and flows. Every year is just a little bit different. 2017 and 2018 were hot, dry years. 2014, 2015, same thing. Drought conditions can change. We got that big dump of rain, more than a quarter of an inch, if I remember correctly, a few weeks back. So, things really ebb and flow. Same thing with the resources available. Not only did we not really have very many large fires here in Washington State, but there weren't very many large fires across the nation, and so there were lots of resources available. Going into this weekend, although there is still some wildfire potential out there, we feel comfortable just staying in stage one restrictions, which means you can have a campfire in a developed campground, generally where you pay a fee and there's a metal developed campfire ring there on the national forest, but you can't have one when you build your own fire pit on the back of a dirt road way out there in the middle of nowhere or in the backcountry. So a few limitations, but, we've allowed campfires all year long.
Okay, well, that's good news, but that's why we have the Good Fire Plan to try and, take care of the undergrowth that grows that isn't removed by natural fire, which sometimes can cause us extreme danger and, unfortunately, loss of property as well. Let's ask you this, Holly. We had you back on the air a month or so ago to talk about the Leave No Trace project, which was an effort to educate people about what should be some real obvious things, but particularly the damage being caused up in the Enchantments and Alpine Lakes Wilderness, about just good citizenship, good stewardship when you're up in in those pristine areas. Have you heard about the turnout, and did people enjoy that and participate well in the project?
We had great participation from the local community and specific, you know, interest groups there in the Leavenworth area, recreation groups. They were able to do some great trail restoration works. They did a lot of public contacts, reached, you know, just dozens of folks over the course of the weekends and the days that they were there, educating about Leave No Trace principles and why it's important not to create switchbacks, or, you know, have your Bluetooth speakers blaring, and, you know, all those kind of things when you go into federally designated wilderness. So great effort, and we're looking at continuing that. Things like, you know, evergreen educational videos that, you know, folks would watch before they got an overnight permit, and some of those other things that will hopefully pay dividends into the future and continue to live long beyond when we had the actual folks from the Leave No Trace organization here in the local area.
Okay, good stuff there. Well, thanks for sharing. Again, it is time for Good Fire, planted over 11,000 acres across the Okanagan-Wenatchee National Forest from the Canadian border to south of Yakima, getting underway here in the next day or so and over the next couple of months. And a lot of that work will be done in Chelan and Okanagan County, and hopefully we'll get just the right conditions so they can get a lot of that work done. But thanks for sharing the update on that. For folks that would like maps and updates on this, if they go to, look, probably the easiest thing to do is go to the Okanagan-Wenatchee National Forest website and then find all the links through the different various social media, and they can kind of stay on top, particularly if there's something kind of going on in their neck of the woods.
Yeah, so we put out this update that says, hey, here's everything that we're planning on burning coming up this fall. But then we also, a huge value of ours is good customer service and working closely with our community. So every day in real time by about 9 a.m. every morning, we're putting out real-time information about where we're burning, how many acres, the wind and smoke dispersal, so that folks have that information at their fingertips before they see a smoke column go up in the air. So folks can pick any combination that they want of the five options that we have available. That's the Forest Facebook page, Twitter. You can sign up for free text messaging. Usually works best on iPhone or Apple products. We also have an interactive map, as well as a phone number that you can call if you choose not to be on a computer or would prefer that option. So there's a lot of different ways that folks can get that daily real-time information.
Yeah. If you live in Leavenworth, Okanagan County area, up in Chelan, Enneat, I think that's going to be a real handy tool for you there. You're going to want to know what's going on there. And Holly, we appreciate the update today. While we have you here, anything else you wanted to pass along for listeners?
I just want to thank the community for their support as we continue to do this work. We know there is a trade-off with putting a little bit of smoke in the air, and asking folks to join us in this effort as we work to restore our forest. So we certainly appreciate their support in this.
Well, we've had a nice, clear summer, but we do need to get a little housework done, so to speak. Thanks for the update.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Dave.
Holly Craik from the Okanagan-Wenatchee National Forest on The Agenda.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ, KPQ.com, and streaming on Alexa or the KPQ mobile app.
Well, Nancy Gretti with Alethea Writing Center was a recent guest of the program to discuss expansion plans for the equine therapy facility in Wenatchee.
That's right. The need is great. I get calls weekly, and we have a waiting list of at least about 40 people that want to get services with the horses, and we're just not able to meet that need because of limitations of our current facility.
So we're going to talk about a couple of different projects at a big fundraising event that's coming up soon, but let's step back just a little bit. For folks who aren't familiar with what's going on at Alethea Writing Center, you've got the opportunity for people who have issues with autism, all kinds of physical disabilities, to get involved with horses, whether it's riding them, just being around them, and those Norwegian Fjord horses you have out there just perform magic, don't they?
They really do. And our mission is to change lives with the healing power of horses, and that's exactly what happens. And we're currently serving about 100 riders a week, ages 3 to 89, and they have a variety of physician-diagnosed disabilities, physical learning and social disabilities.
And so how do people get involved? How does a youngster or even an adult get a chance to get involved in therapy out there?
Well, they can contact us directly through our website, and there is some information on there that they can get in touch with me. There are also referrals from local physicians that are sending young people to us and adults, and also just word of mouth. People are finding out about the program. But get in touch with us either through your doctor or directly on the website.
So I mentioned that there is going to be an effort to try and expand the facility. You
yes.
have kind of a big capital project because you want to help more people, don't you?
It's heartbreaking to say no. And I have to say no on a regular basis right now. So we have a double the capacity campaign that's coming up. And we believe that we will be able to double the number of people that we serve with a facility expansion and relocation project. And we currently have the property. We, through one generous donor, we were able to acquire property. And now we're on the road to developing the campaign so that we can make that a reality.
What would you have more acreage, more covered space, room for more horses?
All of the above, yes. So right now we are crowded on a 3-acre site in a residential area. The new property is 12 acres, so we'll quadruple in size. We will be able to have accommodations for up to 25 horses. We'll have 2 covered riding arenas that will allow us to teach 3 different semi-private or private lessons simultaneously. So it will be a huge improvement in the services that we're going to be able to provide.
So let's talk about a kind of a new initiative yeah. as well, and that is where you're working with veterans who may be suffering from PTSD. It's a project that you got going here recently, just within the last year. Through Vets Serving Vets, helping with that project, this is amazing work. So tell us about that.
Yes, it's very exciting. The results are phenomenal. And we had a pilot program that we ran in February and March of this year, and we had 2 veterans participate, and there were assessments done using standard assessment tools to measure their PTSD symptoms, and the results in just 6 weeks were incredible. One of the gentlemen who participated in the program is now a volunteer in our program and continues to come out and spend time with the horses. And that pilot program was so successful that we ended up launching a full program ahead of schedule, and so we are currently now working with 2 other veterans. And then also recently we had the opportunity to meet with a group of women veterans that came for horsemanship camp. And it was a 3-hour program, and the results of that were really astounding as well. So we're very excited about that.
It's called Warriors and Horses.
Warriors and Horses.
Now, for those, if you just joined us, we're talking with Nancy Gretti with the Alethea Riding Center. There is going to, you just had a little black summer dress party event.
Yes.
You've got a busy fall ahead.
We do.
With your Run for the Roses. Is that
it's the Run for the Roses benefit gala, and it's on October 5th this year. It's always the first Saturday in October. And that's where we raise funds for our operational budget for the next year.
So, first off, if you'd like to get involved with this, when I called you yesterday, right now, you're looking for whether it might be items that could be auctioned off.
Sure.
So tell us what you're looking for right now.
What we have found people want is experiences rather than things. Things are great, and we would love that, too. But if you have any kind of experience, whether it be we love to offer travel opportunities, we love to offer meals out, date experiences, that sort of thing. That's what we're looking for.
So the Run for the Roses is coming up on Saturday, October the 5th. That's the big benefit gala. If you'd like to get involved and provide one of those to help support, what's the best way to do that?
Go to the website, and you can contact me directly via phone or email.
I already know the answer to the next question. If you'd like to volunteer, go to the website.
Yes.
What kinds of volunteer opportunities are there?
Well, there's lots, but the majority of our volunteers come and they actually work directly with the horses and the participants in the program. And you do not need to have horse experience. These horses are gentle and kind and easy. It's easy to learn what you need to do. Volunteers either lead the horse in the lesson or they support the rider, either physically or cognitively or just as a friend alongside. There are other opportunities, too. There's always work parties that need to go on. There's stuff to scoop in the stalls on a regular basis.
Mucking stalls.
Mucking stalls, yes. So there's all kinds of ways to get involved, and we love visitors. So even if you're not interested in volunteering, just come out and see what happens.
So what was the genesis of Alethea Riding Center? We talked a little bit out in the lobby, and your husband wanted to learn how to ride horses.
Well, he did. That's how the family got involved in horses, is he did not want to spend all of his time learning to ride, laying on the ground in the sand, looking at the sky. So he decided what he wanted was a Norwegian Fjord, because they're known for their gentle demeanor and their easygoing personalities, sure-footedness. So we had them and enjoyed them for many years as a family. And then when the family was grown and gone, we had beautiful horses that we needed to have a purpose for. And that purpose revealed itself in, I believe it was actually 2010. It took us a year to get going. But in 2010, when a friend asked if their child could come and ride for her fifth birthday, and this young lady happened to have a disability, and when we put her on the horse, our lives changed forever, and that of everyone else who comes to work at Alethea.
Well, that's wonderful that you did that. And did you ever have a vision that it would become this? This is a 501c3 corporation, so
right.
You're doing this to help families. How many, do you have any idea of how many people have been served in the eight years or so? Yeah. Probably, I don't know if you
thousands.
Have a tally.
Thousands and thousands of rides. I think we do, 30 rides times 130, 3,000 rides a year at least times 8 years. We didn't always have that many riders, but thousands of rides and thousands of volunteer hours.
And it can be so much more. You can double the capacity at the Therapeutic Riding Center with this new capital campaign. You've got the property. You just need to get the funds raised to help complete the facility with more space, more horses, more everything.
Right, and we envision this is going to be a 3-year process. And we're looking for partners from the community, builders, people who want to get involved in any way they can get in touch with us. We'd love to talk to them.
So have you always been around horses since a young child? What's been your background in horses?
I have been around horses most of my life. I took a little break when I first got married and had children, but I grew up with them. And then when my daughter was about 8 years old and started showing interest, we wanted to let her have that experience. And, boy, did that look like fun. And I decided I needed to get involved again, and then the family did, and then this is where we have ended up.
What's it like when, say, a child that may have some sort of disability, or maybe a youngster with something on the autism spectrum, first gets that first initial experience? You've been there, I'm sure, many times. Witness that. What is maybe their reaction or their parents' reaction? What do you notice?
Parents are usually weeping to see their children moving in a way that they've never had an opportunity to move before in some cases. Or also they notice a change in not the physical demeanor, but the way that the child is interacting with the people around them. So someone that might have autism, you see them going from being perhaps highly stressed and the senses are charged and hearing is challenging, but we see all of that just sort of melt away and disappear. So for people with a learning disability or a social disability, that's what we see. When there's a physical issue, you see the body change immediately when they're on a horse. Tight muscles immediately loosen. Muscles that are maybe too loose or lax immediately get their musculature changes and they became strong and more upright. So it's a beautiful thing to see that way too.
Good for the core.
Oh man, the core, yeah. So one thing that we say often is that for every minute that a person is on a horse, there's 100 balance accommodations. Because the body is constantly thrown and moved about, they have to make those accommodations. And that's how bodies get stronger. They don't even realize that they're working and exercising and getting stronger, but it's happening.
What do the volunteers get out of it?
Oh, the volunteers' lives are changed. They come thinking that they get to be around horses, but they find community with their riders, with the other volunteers, and with the staff. They find that they're able to develop a relationship because they work with the same rider every week for 10 weeks, sometimes for years. They develop those relationships, but they really get a sense of purpose and meaning.
Well, again, the answer many times was go to the website, and I think you're going to find a wealth of information about how you could volunteer, how you could support the Capital campaign or the Run for the Roses benefit gala coming up. I notice on the website it says Run for the Roses 2018 benefit gala, but it's coming up October
29th. It's coming 29th. Up October 5th, 2019,
yeah.
And
so
that certainly should be changed.
Throw you off. It is Saturday, October the 5th.
It'll probably be changed before we finish this interview.
So that's coming up on the calendar of events. It's a great-looking website. There's videos on there.
Oh, yeah, the horses are beautiful. Yeah. The stories that you can hear from through the videos are amazing.
Okay, so check that out. Again, AletheaWritingCenter.com, and the spelling may throw you, so I'll do my best here. A-L-A-T-H-E-I-A. What's the story behind that name? What does that mean?
The name comes actually out of Scripture, and it means truth. And for us, it means truth in goodness in everything that we do.
Well, this is a wonderful project. I've wanted to get a chance to meet you. I've seen your posters around town and known about this, and just sad that it took so long to get you on the program.
I'd love to come back.
So happy to have you here, and we'll definitely have you back. And I got to get out there and do some volunteering.
That'd be great.
All righty.
Thank you, Dave.
Wonderful to meet you. Nancy Gretti with the Alethea Writing Center. Again, A-L-A-T-H-E-I-A center.com if you'd like to go. AletheaWritingCenter.com if you'd like to check out the website and see how you can get involved. Thanks for being here on the program today.
Thank you.